I'm Louise Bakshari, standing in for Ryan Tuberty this week and next. And Ro McDermott has joined me in the studio now. She is a Hot Press film critic and a feminist. And she is here because we're going to talk about the representation of women in film. Now, there's lots to talk about here, but the reason that we're talking about it is because at the end of the month, there is a feminist film festival taking place in the New Theatre in Temple Bar. So it's the last weekend in August. This is kicking off. And there's been a lot of talk about the representation of women in film of late, Ro.
Yeah, the IFI just are finishing up their Beyond the Bechdel Test Festival, which was a great season that showed a lot of real female-centric films, had a lot of panels. I was talking on a panel just on the weekend. And then, yeah, the Feminist Film Festival is accepting submissions this weekend for short films that are either made by female directors or have a very female-centric theme. So, yeah, there has been a lot of talk about kind of the representation of women on film, and it's a particularly interesting month because The Congress is coming out, which is a film starring Robin Wright, and it's all about the objectification of female actresses. Oh. And it sees her character become an upload, essentially, so she can forever stay 30 and young and Princess Bride beautiful. Right. And producers can kind of cash in on her beauty and youth indefinitely. Right. Because they can make her upload do whatever. So yeah, there's just a lot of kind of interesting things happening at the moment.
Well, let's start, I suppose, with the Bechdel test. You mentioned it there, because, you know, there's a lot of talk about it, but I think a lot of people aren't really clear on what exactly it is.
Yeah, this was created by a cartoonist called Alison Bechdel, and she has this incredible series called Dykes to Watch Out For, and she's this brilliant feminist writer, and she came up with this really simple idea, and I think she kind of threw it into a comic as just a statement about how ridiculous films can be. And the idea of the test is that a film will pass a test if there are, number one, two named female characters who, number two, talk to each other for a period longer than 30 seconds. And number three, that conversation cannot be about a man. And it seems so simple.
And also funny, because people will go, oh, I mean, there can't be that many films where there aren't two women who have names who talk to each other about something other than a man.
It is.
But there are.
Depressing how many films fail this test. And Sweden has actually begun putting on its rating system. So where you usually see 18s or this has been censored for violence or whatever, it now says whether it's passed or failed the Bechdel test, which means consumers can make that decision to only support films that pass it. Now, we do have to say it's not the be-all and end-all, because a lot of really dodgy films can pass it, like The Hangover 2 technically passed it. You know, there are like bad films that have bad representations of women, but you know, if you get together and talk about shoes, you've technically passed it. So yeah, it's a little bit dodgy, but it is just a nice little indicator of whether there was any effort put in to put two female characters in a room together. And particularly big franchises like Star Trek or The Hobbit or Transformers, obviously, which obviously always has huge problems, like these never pass ever. So it's kind of a nice indicator to show which directors in particular consistently fail this test.
It's also, I think, a good, because I think sometimes you can, you know, if you're having a conversation with someone who's never really considered something like women's representation in film, it's a good kind of starting point.
Absolutely.
Because I think people are surprised when they think about it, about how significant that is.
Yeah, and I think it's going to be a really important thing, because directors and writers and studio executives in Hollywood obviously have this huge responsibility, but I think it's also about reclaiming some of that and for consumers to make that choice. So I think when you kind of analyse that and you look at films that fail it, you can choose not to give that franchise or that studio your money. And I think that's a really important thing, because basically studio executives work on a quadrant basis where they want to appeal to as many audience groups as possible. And the basic quadrants are, if you ignore kids, it's women and boys who are 18 to 25, and then men and women over 25. Mm-hmm. And studio executives ideally want to appeal to at least three quadrants. So to do that, they go for the boys and they market stuff for guys, because they know that it's a lot more likely for a girlfriend to go along with her boyfriend to see the latest Transformers than it is for a boyfriend to go see the latest Twilight, because his girlfriend was like, oh, come on.
What is the story with that? Why is that the way? It's the way with TV at home, I think, as well. Although yesterday on Breakfast Republic, they were talking about this in the opposite way around. They said the guy is always banished to the other room. But I was thinking about this about my relationship recently, that I watch programs that I don't particularly want to watch because he's watching them, but I never make him watch my crap programs. Like, if I want to watch Made in Chelsea, I'll watch it on my own time, you know what I mean?
Yeah, I think it's really interesting, because I was talking on the weekend about how female critics are treated very differently to male critics.
Yeah.
And by extension, female audiences are treated differently to male audiences, because there's kind of this acceptance of the kind of boy racer audience. So Fast and the Furious, that's just escapism, whereas if you're a woman and you enjoyed Sex and the City too, like, you'll genuinely be called like a shallow whore. Like, yeah. there's this real aggressive vitriol yeah. towards a female escapism. And so it's kind of that thing of for men, they're stupid franchises. They're kind of, oh, it's just easy entertainment. Whereas girls' films, they're bad. They're bad films. Yeah. And I think it's a double thing of women's outlets tend not to focus on genuinely good and insightful film criticism. It tends to be 50 words on the latest rom-com, which is kind of pretty damaging, actually. If you look at the film reviews in women's outlets, whether this is online or in magazines, they tend to do this and they tend to focus genuinely on just rom-coms. So it's perpetuating this idea that political thrillers and interesting, intelligent cinema, that's not for women. We're not interested in that. We're only interested in rom-com. And they big, like, I've worked for outlets that have told me to go easier on rom-coms that I thought were utter rubbish. And it's perpetuating this idea that we're not interested in intelligent cinema. And then the critics, then it has a knock-on effect for female critics because we're forced to cover these stupid films. Mm. So our reviews aren't taken as seriously as male reviewers are. So then that has a knock-on effect on the audience where they only respect the opinions of men who are writing about films that are purportedly made by and for men. So it's this really intricate way of kind of separating real cinema from stupid women's yeah. cinema.
Huh. So let's talk about sex and the influence that has in the way that women are portrayed in film, because I know the latest Transformers film was highly criticised.
Oh, God. Yeah. It just made me die a little bit inside.
Now, I haven't seen it, so maybe you can explain okay. the problems.
First of all, we have to address Michael Bay is a repeat offender in this regard, because all of his women who are his leading women are always incredibly beautiful. He never passes the Bechdel test, like, ever. Also, his films like Pain and Gain, they're incredibly homophobic and slightly racist, and he's just very problematic director. But all of his female characters are introduced by their legs. First of all, panning up, they're usually wearing a man's shirt because that's the epitome of sexiness. They all have that very model-esque physique. They're usually radioactive orange, which I don't understand. They're always in white because they're so pure and beautiful, and they're always wearing completely clean, even though the Transformers are attacking them. But the huge problem with the new film is that his leading lady, Nicole Peltz, she's playing a 17-year-old girl. She is also introduced by her legs. Her father figure, who is played by Mark Wahlberg, has a prolonged conversation with her kind of uncle figure, who's a family friend, about how hot she's getting.
What?
Yeah, it's incredibly disturbing. And then our own little Jack Rayner, who plays her boyfriend, who is 20, he has literally about a 10-minute long conversation with Mark Wahlberg saying, yeah, he's of age now and she's underage for the state that they're in, but he's allowed to have sex with her thanks to the Romeo and Juliet laws, which he has printed out and kept in his wallet. So it's this huge conversation about the legality of having sex with her.
So, like, just so that people know,
it's okay to perv on her because there's this legal loop hole which Michael Bay has put a huge amount of thought in and felt the need to shoehorn into his film. So it's incredibly gross, and it is kind of perpetuating rape culture in this way of, like, justifying perving over a 17-year-old. And it's just really disturbing. And it was mentioned in a lot of reviews, but this is another issue that when I mentioned it in my review, I know Tara Brady from the Irish Times mentioned it in her review, and there was a lot of, oh, calm down, it's just a Michael Bay film. However, when male critics mentioned it in their review, they were being so progressive, you know. And it's an argument that's used against feminism all the time, that if you address it and when you're a woman, you're kind of harping on about it and being quite shrill and nagging. Yeah. Whereas if you're a guy, it's so wonderful how enlightened you are. So it's this double standard where you see things through a woman's lens, and so of course you recognise it more, but if you talk about it, then you're being a nag. So it's incredibly irritating as a critic.
So, I mean, there's no doubt then that female actresses' value is determinedly attached largely to their physical appearance, and that means that ageing is obviously a huge problem as well.
Yeah, and it's really interesting. If you look at female actresses who are a little bit older now, there are very few women who were able to be kind of sexy on screen who went on to have really respected careers. So one of the only examples really is Helen Mirren, who's a real siren in her time, like back in the day when she started out acting, and she was this very sexualized but empowered female actress, and then she's gone on to have a really respected career. And of course, I mean, the icon of actresses is Meryl Streep, of course, but she was always rather, like, interesting and intellectual. She never had a lot of sex sexualized roles. Mm. And then you have people like Judi Dench and Maggie Smith, but they always played old. So if you actually think of women their age, there are very few who are allowed to be sexy on screen and then have this prolonged, you know, career. Whereas if you can, you know, if you do the alternative with actors, there are so many men who are able to be good looking on screen and then are hugely respected. But then, I mean, the offshoot of that is that women are expected to be terrified of aging, and rightly so, because they lose their careers if they dare to get old.
Their value.
But if they do anything about it, then they're mocked mercilessly. I mean, the amount of, like, any film that Nicole Kidman does now, like, at least a paragraph is always focused on how she has Botox and how she had lip fillers. Yeah. And so it's the idea, well, you're going to take her career away from her if she doesn't, but then you're going to attack her if she does. So it's this really horrible double standard that places so much pressure on actresses on screen.
It has to be very difficult to live within that world. I mean, I don't know if it's something that I would want to get into.
I know. And it's, I mean, it gets even worse when you look at the plights that are facing female directors or screenwriters in Hollywood. Because there's a thing called fast tracking in Hollywood. And it's if you make a low budget film, then that does really well and is critically acclaimed, then you're given a huge budget for this huge studio film. So it's happened to so many men. So Gareth Edwards is usually quoted in this because he made Monsters, which was made for $500,000, which is nothing. It was this really beautiful, clever little sci-fi, and then he got Godzilla. Or you have Mark Webb, who made 500 Days of Summer, which was a lovely rom-com.
Yeah.
And he immediately got the Amazing Spider-Man franchise. That has literally never happened, a female director. Yeah. And I think it's interesting in the case of Mark Webb, because a lot of people would say, oh yeah, but a lot of like female directors don't want to make big budget films, they don't want to make blockbuster or action movies. But he made a rom-com and he was still trusted with a huge budget of a big action film.
Yeah.
And I think it is still a wariness of trusting a female director with a budget and trusting them with a genre shift, whereas men don't get pigeonholed in the same way.
Yeah.
And even if you look at Brave, which was Pixar's first female protagonist, and that was a huge deal for them, but that was written by Brenda Chapman, and she based it on the relationship she had with her daughter. And so it was this very mother-daughter centric film, and it passed the Bechdel test. But Brenda Chapman was removed as director and replaced by a man because they were worried it was getting too female-centric. So it's still, the studios have a real wariness of giving anything to female directors.
Well, is there any progress? Like, are we getting anywhere? Are things improving?
I think they are definitely improving, but I think they could do a lot more. I mean, for example, I was talking at the IFI Film Festival about cinema in Ireland, and there's only been one female director in Ireland who's had 3 feature films made, and that's Pat Murphy, which is outrageous, really, if you think of all the directors that we're producing. But I think it's about, we had a conversation about whether kind of affirmative action is a good idea, and putting in quotas for the amount of funding that the film board will give to directors, and whether it should be at least 30% or at least 50% should be given to female directors. And I actually don't think it's a bad idea at this point, because there isn't a level playing field, particularly in Ireland, and it needs to. But I think there is progress in terms of, if you look at the US box office, last year, the films that passed the Bechdel test made more money collectively than films that failed. And I think it's just indicating that both intelligent writing will automatically pass, because you have to have fully rounded characters if you're going to write intelligently. And audiences appreciate that. And I think if studios pay attention to those figures, then there absolutely will be progress. But I think consumers have to start thinking about their responsibility too. Because if you go along, and if you're a man or a woman, and you go, ah, sure, look, I'll go along to see the next Transformers films, and it's just a bit of escapism. But you have to keep in mind that your money is letting the studios know this formula is working, and so we're going to make another one, and so we're going to perpetuate this, and we're going to keep this going, in opposed to paying for great independent cinema.
Yeah, yeah.
That is, you know, directed by females or has intelligent writing.
Yeah, I mean, I know a lot of people hold up like Bridesmaids as this great film that was, you know, cast was almost entirely female and written by a woman. And I think people kind of thought that was the start of an upturn in terms of female cinema. But I suppose we'll have to wait and see.
Yeah, hopefully.
All right. Well, thank you so much, Ro McDermott. She is the film critic at Hot Press. And I gather you're off to San Francisco soon on a Fulbright scholarship, which is pretty amazing.
Yeah, studying sexuality studies. So where else would I do it? Like, but going to keep on working for Hot Press anyways. Keep an eye out.
Cool. Well, listen, best of luck with all of that. And thanks a million for that. Now,